Bandwidth for the Weird Things podcast provided by Wired Tree. For sites of any size and world-class customer service, head on over to WiredTree.com.
Hello and welcome to After Things. I'm Andrew Main, joined by Justin Robert Young.
Hey, what's going on?
Mr. Bryce Castillo.
Hello. How's it going?
So mysterious.
So right before we started recording, I started going off on a tangent about like kind of like my life as a writer and creative. And one of the things that I keep having to drill into my own head, because I've watched other creatives make this mistake, and that is, forget who is listening to somebody like, you know, why are creatives so upset? It's because we're all poor, you know, and that's often the case. Is if you're a creative, you spend a lot of time working towards something and you spend a tremendous amount of energy on a thing that has no immediate reward. You know, maybe you have a job, or maybe you spend part of your time in your job and part of your time, your creative energy working on something that will maybe pay off someday. Right. And you know, if you are a writer, that can be the case. You could spend several years working on a book. Most cases, that thing never happens, but sometimes it does. And even rare cases, it becomes a hit and the book sells a lot of money. Sells a lot. That's great. But the mistake that can be made for writers, I see this with actors. Actors struggle for a few years, then they get some big commercial gig and they get a chunk of change. Not millions, but still more money than they've had at one given time, like 2 years worth of a salary all at once or something. The creative brains, the creatives, often what happens is we think this is the new normal. You know, you get this windfall, you know, all of a sudden you get this book contract. Somebody's paid you $50,000 for a book. And like, oh, wow, I just got $50,000 for this thing. And, you know, would have been, you know, when I was younger, a year's worth of work, whatever, all at once. And if I had this every year or whatever, you start to think like that. And because you feel that it's due and that it should be coming to you, and then maybe you spend some of it or spend more of it than, you know, you really want to, but you sort of think that more will come, and maybe more will come. But eventually, even if you're the top actor in the world, you're going to have good years and you're going to have bad years. And we often get confused because you'll hear about some successful actors having financial problems or something, or it's fighting with their, you know, their lawyers or their agents. I mean, you're like, how is this? Because I just saw them in this movie and they must have made millions for it. Well, you might have an actor that might make $20 million a year. Well, it's rare now, but you might make $20 million a year. And then they have a couple off hits or whatever. Things don't get made, put into development. And then they make $5 million, which you're like, well, that's still a lot of money. But if you're like that actor bought one of the islands we talked about in Weird Things, and that actor has a staff of 20 people or so, you know, right now, I've only seen little glimpses of it, but you watch this, the Kevin Hart series on Netflix, and you realize you're just Kevin Hart, and there's like 20, 30 people that work for him. You know, there's an entire team of people that he has to pay, you know, and keep them going. And so my point is, it's going to happen to anybody. And that's a thing that I always try to be mindful of, is when things are really good, is assume this is not the norm. Plan for when it's not. And that's my biggest piece of advice, is just like, you know, when you hit your high level of success, assume that might be the peak, and assume that everything else from there on out is going to be down, and just try to make the best of that.
You know, the biggest lesson that I've learned in my 20s and brought into my 30s was to always have a next. Yep. Always have a thing. Always have like the next thing you want to do, because the biggest heartbreak I ever saw in myself or my friends was always when all the eggs were in one basket.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that it's such a danger, and it really is something that is wholly avoidable. Because I don't think that, you know, there's a conflation between, you know, I think, God, I can't remember who it was, but I think it was a Magic interview that I did where I was asking, you know, what's the biggest piece of advice that you would give to somebody that's starting? And that was like, don't have a plan B. Like, have this be your one thing, because if you are a magician but you're also a travel agent, at some point there's going to, in any entertainment lifestyle and entertainment journey, there's going to be a rough patch where you're going to be like, God, this sucks. Like, why don't I just spend more time being a travel agent and doing that, and that you'll that desire will be so great. And certainly there is a value to knowing what you want and going out and getting it. But at the same time, man, just having that little other thing that you could have, and it doesn't have to be the 9-to-5 job. If you're like, all right, no, I want to be a gig entertainment worker, like, you can have another gig entertainment thing that benefits your main pursuit, but also is on some way divergent, right? Like, on some way, you know, puts your skills that you are honing in another basket, or you keep trying different projects. Like, there is a way that I think just mentally you can sharpen yourself and always have another thing that you want to do, another wing to this house that you're building.
I'm all for building up skills and stuff, but I'll tell you who was the don't have a plan B. Do you remember who said that?
No, I don't.
Penn and Teller. What was Penn?
Okay. Yeah.
Because Penn's attitude was, because he convinced Teller to quit teaching because he said, hey, if we're going to go do this, we got to do it 100%. We can't do it half-assed. It can't be, you know, oh, we'll go do this on the weekends. We'll do Ren Fairs on the weekends. During the rest of the week, we're going to have jobs. If we want to do this, we got to go all out into it like that. Now, Penn had his juggling, and Teller had his teaching. But the idea there, though, is, and which I believe in, and I think that some of my failure in life has been for me being not all in on something, because once you're all in, you think differently. I probably should have moved to LA 5 years earlier than I did. You know, I had real credible reasons for not doing it, but I can think of a lot of times where I tried to half-ass it because I said, well, I'm going to do this thing too, and this will be my safety net, this whatever. And I spent just as much time developing that, and I'm not in the point of fear and the point of cunning. You know, there's a point where you commit yourself to it and you say, I've got to make this thing work, and I can't go home tonight. I can't do this. So yeah. I think it comes down to the kind of person you are too.
And you know, if you're the kind of person who, you know, you are doing a 9-to-5 and maybe you're doing something, you're doing your passion on the side, and you are trying to, you know, you are about to make that leap, or if you are starting to wonder, like, is this the right time, or when is the right time? The other big thing, which I don't know that we talk too much about on this show, is like networking and like making sure you like know your contemporaries,
sure,
as much as you're able to expand your network. In, you know, like I know on Twitter I follow a lot of comedian people, and just this past week College Humor changed ownership and almost everybody got fired. Video staff, writing staff, illustration staff, and you know, you hope that all those people can find work again. And when you're thrown into that unexpected situation, networking is a big thing. Who you know helps out a lot.
I think it's critical. Let's talk about that in a second. I want just one more thought, if you guys want to respond to it too. When I'm talking about the all in, I mean, if you say that, like, you want to be Penn, if you're a magician, say, no, I want to be Penn and Teller, I want to be in Vegas, I want to be headlining there. That's what I mean. If you're just like, no, I want to build a side business where I do shows on the weekend and whatever. Yeah, that's different. That's fine. But to be all in, to say, I knew when I wanted to become a writer, when I wanted to do that, I knew I had to spend a good year of doing nothing but writing. And I'd even actually stopped pitching TV shows and everything else like that, which, as fate always works, that's when I started getting the calls to do TV, was once you stop doing it. But it's a risky situation because most times it will fail. So the smart advice is to do something else. In the cases of the people that have succeeded incredibly well, it's all in, you know, it's just that all in kind of thing. But Justin's right. Like, that's not the formula for success, because the formula says that most people won't.
Well, but let me parse that just a little bit more, because one of the greatest things about the career of Penn and Teller is, you know, they have always hustled beyond the act, right? The act is the act. They care about the act. They love the act. It's the reason why they are the longest running headliners in Vegas, I believe. And their act is still fresh. It still wins awards because they care about it. They also have done video games and done reality television competitions, and they've done a bunch of different things because they know that that adds on to their success. That is a huge part of it. And I think that there is a massive benefit to always thinking kind of globally on that, on
but
careers.
Yeah, but those were things about the Penn and Teller brand. And I'm talking the early days before we knew who Penn and Teller were, you know, it was a focus. It wasn't like Teller didn't go up and direct.
I'm not disputing that.
Yeah. But yeah, then you grow. Yeah, you grow because it evolves over time. What are you? What do you do? And I think they've done, you know, a wonderful job of they're still so relevant, you know? You know, Bryce, your point on networking, you know, if I were to go through my many, many flaws, like I am horrible. And I don't mean networking, and networking kind of gets its bad sort of name because it's like you go to a network meetup and it's just a bunch of opportunists trying to meet other opportunists and nobody has opportunity. Yeah. But just genuine keeping in touch with people and doing this stuff, I'm the worst at that. You know, I'm the kind of thing like if everything fell out from underneath me like tomorrow, like I'd be in my car. I'd live in my car because I don't have enough of a network to be able to talk to people like, hey, you know, who do you know here? Who's looking for a guy to sit around all day and think about book? I don't know. I'm very bad. Even though I live in LA, I'm horrible at that.
Yeah, I know I'm not great at it. I have a tough time meeting new people and talking to new people. I found that the times when it has been easiest for me, or I have made lasting sort of connections, is working with people, mm-hmm. whether it's collaborating or whether, you know, asking advice, giving advice, asking questions, like, because you're right. Like you go to a meetup and you kind of don't know who's going to be there. You don't kind of know the level of experience or kind of where you are in life. You know, I mean, it's a wide open pool and there's a good amount of chance in that, but when you work together with somebody, then you get a really innate sense of how you feel about that person. Oh, mm-hmm. like not just oh they do good work and I admire that, but here was how I responded as we worked together. Here was like how, you know, we got and that makes like a much more lasting impression than we traded business cards and we talked on the phone every so often.
So I want to throw this out there. Like, I'm going to quiz each one of us here. Okay.
All right.
Yesterday was Sunday, which maybe atypical, but how many people did you either talk to on the phone or text with yesterday? Let me pull up mine.
I think the answer would be just in time. Maybe like four. I think it would be four, and one of those was a group chat. And assuming we're not talking about like Discord or something, which is already like a big group communications device, I think it would be three or four for me.
I texted with four people yesterday. I texted with four people yesterday, and it's the same people I spoke to.
Yeah, I spoke to Andrew, texted with Brian, obviously talked to my wife. And then I think I texted two other people. Yeah, Scott about his YouTube channel, and then Heaton about an email that I got sent to both of us, but yeah. So those were the people.
I would have thought you would be more. I always, cause I know your network is just way bigger. It was just cause it was Sunday.
Yeah. That's so funny. Cause I think I'm a terrible network. I don't like, I mean, like I think I find myself receding as I get older. I yeah. find myself kind of like, especially now that I don't work in a office or anything like that, I find myself just kind of like inventing more and more reasons why I should talk to less and less people.
And it's not it's slightly removed from just charisma, right? Like it's one thing to be like on the podcasts and we we do our thing for a couple hours, but like opening up and like talking to new people, or even just like keeping up the relationships that you have in your personal life,
feels like such a different
thing. So I because I know, like, I think people might see you, Justin, as like a very bombastic, you know, big personality, but I know that, you know, you're still pretty even keeled.
Oh yeah, I mean, in my, you know, my when I'm not around, I mean, I'm still an animated, you know, kind of guy just screwing around. I don't think there's like, you know, my especially on Night Attack, you know, my persona there is certainly a part of me, but it is an exaggerated part of me. Otherwise, like, I don't know, I really do like talking to people, which I think does lend me to be a good networker if I'm out and around, right? Like, I think there was a reason why with iTrix, I was able to meet and become friends with a bunch of people fairly quickly within a few years, because I was, you know, I do just like asking questions, and I like, and specifically in magic, I liked asking questions that were beyond the questions that magicians ask each other constantly. So it
and
was,
and that's
it
a
was,
format, you know, that's kind of like a mixed use, right? You get to do both. You have like the ease of like, hey, we're doing this thing, and here is kind of what that looks like normally.
Yeah, I mean, like, most of my really good friends now came from that period of my life.
You're welcome.
Came from magic, really. And yeah, that's like, you know, Brian and Andrew, and I mean, Andrew obviously was the progenitor of it, but it's like, even now I look at my Facebook and it's like 80% people talking about magic stuff that I has not been a daily part of my life in a long time.
Sorry about that one.
it's mostly fun until the bitching starts. But, you know, in general, I do like talking to, although I'm about to get back into that, because now I'm going out on the road to cover the politics stuff. And I realize that, like, wow, the most pivotal part of this is going to be meeting up with people at, you know, at the bars afterward, and leveraging some of the connections that I've made through the last few years to be like, to be more of a part of that. And, I'm kind of scared of it, because, you know, there have been some times where I've met people and I think they're dicks, and I don't know if I have that, like, laugh it up. Part of the reason why I was a good networker in my 20s was because I sometimes like enjoyed assholes. I enjoyed hanging out and being around assholes, because like,
wait a second here.
Now, what company is he continuing to keep?
I'm just like, well, and Andrew was never an asshole. I mean, mostly. you know, but even through like my college times in New York and comedy and stuff like that, you have to have a fairly high threshold for like, oh, that's just them. That's just that person being that person. And I was at Politicon and I met people that will remain unnamed that, you know, had a little status, and they were total dickheads. And I was just like, wow, do I just not want to be around you at all? There was no charming element to that, in a way that I feel like a 25-year-old me would be like, ah, classic, this person being this person. And I don't know. I don't know if that makes me. But then again, I also don't know if that's just me in my head inventing more and more reasons to be around less and less people.
You know, there is that thing as you get older, and, you know, part of it's like, I know for me was like realizing how much of me not being cool to other people was because of my, and not intentionally, but just my own insecurity. Like how much my own insecurity is robbed people like, oh, he's kind of aloof or this, whatever. I'm like, oh no, when we met at the party, I was scared. I didn't know anybody. I didn't talk because I was afraid to say something stupid, be like, oh no, I just thought, you know, people, you realize like this, but you kind of reach a point too, where you, when you do meet people who kind of get away with being a couple occasionally, I've been at parties where people have been kind of like, try to be kind of like, I don't know, big shot stuff, and I just kind of call it out right there, because like, I just, there's no need, you know, like I could go into examples of this, but sometimes you just sort of like, I kind of well, I'm going to go shut this person down because I just saw them be rude to this other person, which just was not acceptable. And if I'm ever like that, I would love for, not love in the moment, but I would appreciate if somebody to remind me like, hey, you know, you don't look like a good guy right now when you treat people like that, you know?
Yeah.
But I just get older. I just have less patience for that because, you know, I you can't give time to everybody, but it's not an excuse to be mean. And you know, it just sort of shows insecurities.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, if we're just talking about people being, you know, a-holes, like, don't forget, like...
Fine, Bryce. Let it loose. Let me hear it. Fine.
Like, you know, it's interesting hearing you say that, Andrew, that you are the kind of person who would be like, hey, I'm... Like, you need to, I'm giving you the red light. Like, you should, like, re-examine yourself. Because I am not that type of person. I am like, a grin and bear it type of person who, and I just remember. People remember. You are not invisible. And more likely than not, I think people will just simply remember the way that you act and go from there.
Yeah, that somebody, nobody ever said that. The comment was, man, Bryce is the biggest jerk in their tech. I, as a practice, like what I do on Twitter, like, I never, to my knowledge, I don't think I've ever gone negative. And even I avoid trying to be snarky with people because I'll put a thing up there like, somebody threw up some sort of, I said something and somebody put up some sort of analogy and I responded like with another, like this, whatever. And they went ballistic, like, no, you're simplifying things, blah, 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 blah. And you're smug, da, 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 da. And I'm like, and it's one of these things like, man, like you should really read this tweet thread and see who's got the smugness, but I don't want to get in. I don't want to have that discussion. Yeah. I don't want to have that. Cause I said, I want to be a nice guy. Yeah. And a nice guy responds is I wrote back like, oh man, I didn't mean to offend you. I thought we're having a friendly conversation. And not a passive aggressive way, whatever. Not a, hey, but you said this. No, let me point out this thing that you did that was wrong. I'm just like legit, like I didn't want to offend that person. You know, uh-huh. I didn't mean to, and that's been my approach. And again, not like I'm going to win them over, but I'm just like, I'll put down the rope right now because I'm here to be friendly. And if I say something that doesn't come across friendly, no.
But it's so interesting because, again, I'm like the opposite on that. On Twitter, that's where I will like be like, hey, like you don't need to be doing this or telling me this, you know, because in that instance, it's like a lot of times, you know, if someone retweets something and then someone else sees it and then it's people removed from people you would know. Mm-hmm. Then it's just like I am a stranger to you. You don't need to talk to me that way. But that's me being stubborn. That's a place where I feel like I can be aggressive, and then I just get stubborn about protecting myself.
I remember what it was. Is I retweeted the Matt Ridley article about how the last 10 years has been the best years for human history. You get in the article, it talks about how for the poorest people on the planet, that's the point of it, is for the poorest percentage of the planet, the quality of life has improved dramatically. Huh. The problem is it's an article where if you see the headline, many people think they know what they think that it's many people will assume like, oh yeah, if you're rich, it's been great. And it's like, no, the point of this is if you're poor, it's been great because of eradication of disease, all these other things in there. So I retweeted this because it's like, let's pay attention to what works. If we want to solve the problems, let's look at what worked and growing economies, things like that work. And I had two people who are like the same thing, like, oh, a lot of rich people are feeling that. Like, ah, oh, you probably feel that in your smugged fancy restaurant, whatever. And it's like, I know they didn't read the article. I know they didn't read the article, you know, and it's like,
I also know that they don't see where you eat.
True that. That is very true. And so, I'm like, okay, I can ignore. And usually I just ignore. So I'm like, I'm going to engage, but I want to do this in a way where I'm sincere. I'm not passive aggressive and trying to present myself as this assertive person, but really being passive aggressive and angry. Cause it's like, I want this person to read the article. I want them to do this. And so, you know, my response is like, well, I think the data is pretty sound, but if there's some factor, something to take exception to, you know, I'd love to know what it was, yeah. Which is my way of saying, Did you read it? And the answer was in both times was basically an F you, whatever. I don't need to read this to know. And it's like, all right, there's no conversation to have here. You had one guy said, now I'm blocking you. I'm like, and there's no reasoning with that. But anyhow, I guess my point is like, I've made a big effort like on Twitter to engage with people, but just not to use mental judo, not to point out where they're dumb or where their mistakes they made. Just try to be sincere as possible.
That's a good plan.
I mean, also, man, evergreen lesson. The internet is where tone goes to die. Like anything that you write, email, Twitter is the most ridiculous form of it. But like anything you write, especially if you think it might be controversial, do yourself a favor and read it in the angriest, most unfair tone that you possibly can read it back in your head. And even if you're like, nobody would. Yes, you don't control that. Like at the very least, you don't know how people are reading it. You don't know what's above and below it. You don't know what mood people are in. Like that is always something where you have to figure it out.
You know, the past like week or so, I've been more aware of. So on my phone, I have this the Apple screen time report. So you can have it tell you every month or every week. Here are the apps that you use the most. Here are what you had on screen the longest. And Twitter was usually like the highest one for me. And I found between either the times that I waste just like grazing on Twitter, you know, just like looking for anything new to look at, and having a wide spectrum, let's say, of interactions on Twitter, I started doing the it's like a time limit. You can say on your phone like, hey, only let me spend about 15 minutes a day on Twitter. And it'll give me a little 5-minute warning. It's like, hey, you have 5 minutes left on Twitter. And when it goes out, a little hourglass comes up. And, you know, you can say like, hey, give me another minute, or give me another remind me again in 15 minutes or something. Or you can just turn it off for that. Like it's a very soft limit, but it's enough where I see the icon get grayed out and I go, yeah, I probably don't need to find it. I actually don't need to know what's happening right now. I actually don't need to be up on current events.
That makes sense. Like I was using it a lot. Like I use it now when something's going on, like the whole Iran stuff, whatever, I'll go there because there's probably a half dozen or so people who I'll go see what they're saying, because I know they're very good at covering a wide range of opinions, number one, which I like, because I'm like, well, this is what this group is saying here. This is what this person's saying here. And sometimes sometimes I'll see stuff there before it makes it into the rest of the news. Sure. So I use it a lot more now for news, because I'm less siloed, you know, by doing that and more doing a search function and not just follow up 5 people who say this. I'll do search functions to see who's talking on topics.
Yeah. But I think stuff like, you know, today we're recording this on the 13th, all the Oscar nominations came out, and just seeing everyone, you know, be like, oh, this didn't happen, this happened. Like I am like not into major award shows at all in any case. So,
well, for me to be on it
and wasting time of like, okay, yeah. Okay. Then
because also at that point you read it, and you read people that you appreciate and you like their opinions and they're passionate about it. And then you're like, wait, do I really have an Awkwafina take?
Right.
Like, should I write something about how I really feel? Like, I don't even see that movie. Like, should I really like get furious about it? Like, do I even like Awkwafina? Like why is this like a thing? Should I just retweet somebody who made a funny comment about Awkwafina? And then you realize like, I'm with you, Bryce. Like, you're scrolling, you're like, God damn it, it was the top of the hour when I started thinking about Awkwafina, and now it's the end of the hour. Like, I've been on this stupid app, like, just looking at, like, I've just been sucked into this vortex of, like every pull of the refresh might have the answer for me.
Right. And it never does.
Yeah.
It never does. The experience, well, part of it is just like, I'm not finding, I have good heartwarming moments sometimes on Twitter, but a lot of times it's just wasted time. And I feel like hours, there are just days where I'm just like, somebody say something so I can look at something. When in reality, it would just be better if I watched a TV show or something instead.
Yeah. I find that too. Like, I love like my RSS feeds and stuff there, cause I reach the end of it, you know, and I'm like, I've got all the news I need. But I do find that like when big events happen, I like going there and looking at different sort of, cause like you find out stuff before or you sort of realize we don't know anything, go back to work, you know? And again,
it's, you know, the ever complex unfolding of Twitter.com. Yeah. Hell of a mess.
But I like it if you're intellectually honest, meaning you're looking to get multiple look at different perspectives. It's an amazing tool.
Let me put it this way. Twitter rules. Like, and I don't know whether or not I am here to say that when it comes to Twitter, I don't know if I'm defending democracy or heroin. Like, I really don't know whether or not I feel like it is entirely plausible that in 10 years I'll be like, oh, yeah, that was that time that I was running up and down yelling everybody the health benefits of shooting up. Or I am indeed Cicero writing about the benefits of democracy. Like, I am unsure, but I know that they both have double-edged swords that right now I just look there. Sporting events, these kinds of discussion, you dip in, you can get these great things. I wouldn't have even realized that there were a lot of people pissed off about the fact that like Uncut Gems and Awkwafina and J-Lo didn't get nominations. But I look back and I saw Hustlers and I'm like, yeah, well, you know what? I thought when I walked out of Hustlers, I thought that J-Lo could get a nomination because that was a really good performance. I don't know. Beyond that, I don't know if I need to go into the history of Latina representation in awards shows, or whether or not Hustlers was indeed a solid enough movie to merit consideration. But I'm glad that I had that thought. I'm glad that I looked at it and I'm like, oh, cool. Look at that. I enjoy movie conversation. Some of my favorite conversations in life have been getting into the relative merits of movies. I'm glad I got to into that and then go away. But at the same time, I can see where, boy howdy, if you don't always keep a sight of the coastline, you can find yourself out to sea real quick. That riptide is quick.
My girlfriend will ask me, like, she's asked me, like, what do I think of like the whole Harry and Meghan Markle thing, you know? And I'm like, I don't need to have an opinion on that at all. I don't need to have an opinion at all. And not to say that it's not relevant to something or whatever, but I'm like, the amount of hard drive space that I should be apportioning to that, zero, zero.
It is amazing. That's one of those things where the story I want to talk about with that whole thing is how many different ways this has been sliced to make it a part of another story, right? That it's like, oh, it's about Diana dying. It's about conspiracies. It's about the royal family being this bloodthirsty a relic that this person is escaping. No. It's about Meghan Markle being this American social justice warrior and her destroying yet another institution that these SJWs are doing. And it's like, I'm like, I don't give a rat's ass, whatever. Let them live their lives. If they want to leave and not do photo ops, let them leave and not do photo ops. Let them give them a Queeby series. Everybody gets a Queeby series. Yeah. Give the kids a Queeby series. If that's what they want so bad, give them a Queeby. Suits too, whatever. Give it to them.
What was interesting was the video of Harry talking to Bob Iger and how that just sort of disappeared from everywhere.
And then that becomes its own thing, right? Like it's an Iger thing, and they're going to go to Hollywood, they're going to go to Canada, they're going to go to whatever. And it's like, what's fascinating to me is that it is this very bizarre Rorschach of like, there were the final relics of the monoculture. Like, now there is no way to just talk about, like, are they unhappy? What is the role of the royal family in the modern world, right? Because those would be the monoculture kind of ideas of it. No, everything gets sucked into their own subcultures. And then those stories become their own things, and everybody has their own evidence to make it. And to be fair, I'm not here to pass judgment on it. No. Yeah, that all can be true, right? Like, I just have no interest in those subcultures, and therefore I don't really have much of an interest on the royal family. And so, fine, cool. They're going, they're coming, they're staying. Somebody knew, somebody didn't knew. They don't like each other. Fine. I'm sure that there's a lot of British people for whom that want to criticize us.
This
for the
sounds a lot like you having an opinion on the royal family. There's a lot of royal family talk going on for the man who has no opinion on the royal family.
A lot. I mean, I pay attention to news, so you can't help but know at least a passing amount about it. Yeah. But I find it fascinating that it is subsumed into so many other subcultures. And the reason why I do know so much about it is because it's subcultures that I care about, that I read about. And so it's like, why are the top four posts on like the Trump forums that I follow about Meghan Markle? Like, that's what fascinates me. Like, in an election year, we're talking about Meghan Markle, who will have likely very little interaction on the election, and certainly doesn't play any major policy role in what we're doing.
Yeah.
Wiping my hard drive.
Yeah.
Want to do picks?
Let's do it.
Yeah. I got a quick the pick.
Royals.
the Royals. No, I actually... here I go. We got this. This is an easy one. Talking about stuff that we're recently watching, or at least that was my Weird Things pick. I also restarted watching the NBC comedy Community again.
Mm-hmm.
Community holds up. It had been such a long time since I actually watched it. It must have been when that last season came out on Yahoo when I actually watched Community again. So diving back into it, it was great. Community is great. Hey, Community, that's a good show.
I'm finishing the last season with my girlfriend right now. This is the first time for us seeing it. First few episodes were rough. First few episodes, pilot episode, whatever. I'm like, it starts off to be about one sort of thing. I was texting Jess. I'm like, what's the deal with the show? Why are people into it? And then once Harmon and co were able to do their crazy sort of stories and just really explore that world and those characters, absolutely loved it. Yeah. I will say though, it's funny to watch like Dan Harmon critical of other story structures when you're like, it's like there is one structure here. And it's enjoyable, but there is one, like Rick and Morty, after a while you realize, oh, there's this, you know, there's three basically there, but it's an enjoyable show. And I think that once it became more about the relationships, not specifically the characters, it became more fun. And yeah, so,
but also not like being overdrawn about that. Cause I think that's where, especially like really soapy sort of drama shows can lose it, is they just all have the same characters and they're all just, you just got to put random people together now, because that we can't add new people, but we also have to use everybody. Like, I think that's also a nice thing about Community, is that it kind of keeps it pretty compact.
Just the later seasons where you just watch names disappear from the opening crawl, you know, and like, you know, Keith David's a good addition, you know, but you're like, it feels a little empty here.
Yeah, the Hulu image that they have, because they have those full screen graphics on Hulu, it's like one of the it's from the last season promo shot. So there's no Chevy and there's no Donald Glover on it. But Community is really good. It's all on Hulu. I think it's really cool. It's fun watching, because you know, talking about like you know, the creator's voice, which you see a lot in Rick and Morty, especially of like having comments on genres of films and TV.
I'm still very early in community, but you see it really strong here too.
Yeah.
In terms of having something to say about romantic comedies or TV writing and sitcoms and all.
And I get to make fun of my girlfriend because she took classes at the college it's based on.
Oh, really? Hey.
Hey, I got a TV pick. The final season, I believe, is airing now, but my wife and I are catching up on season 5 of Schitt's Creek.
Oh, yeah.
So season 6, I guess, is debuting now. But man, I know I've said it a million times. I think this has been my pick a bunch of times. That cast is just a murderer's row. Like, all 4 of those characters are so well developed and, you know, can just get laughs based on like looks and glances and stuff like that. But also, it is just this in our age of a lot of sitcoms are kind of defined, especially post like Seinfeld. Sitcoms were often the edgy, well-written ones were like defined by characters making selfish moves, right? Or doing things that were negative or bad or cheating or something like just showing like they're like good guys, but maybe they're bad guys. This show has consistently, and especially compared to Arrested Development, which is very much about selfish characters doing selfish things. I read an interview with the guy who the showrunner, Eugene Levy's son, whose name I forget now.
Dan Levy.
He was like, really, this is a show about what if aliens showed up on Earth and learned to be Earthlings? And you slowly realize that, like, yes, they are entitled, but they are good people and they become better people and they're slowly learning. And it's
that's what I said, I think, maybe when I tried to sell you on the show. You know, conceptually, it's not very different from Arrested Development in terms of a rich family having money troubles.
Yeah.
But unlike Arrested Development, where people either don't have any growth or have, say, stunted development, here all of the people tend to have strengths and develop into better, more rounded characters instead of, you know, one-dimensional, two-dimensional beings that are just kind of like that don't ever change.
And just Catherine O'Hara, I mean, a treasure. I'm just very excited that a generation of people that maybe didn't see Best in Show, let alone, you know, Second City, hell, might not even know her as the Home Alone mom, just get to see her doing just a insane performance. Like, she is just one of the funniest people who ever lived.
Yeah. You know, part of what's fascinating to me is how Dan Levy, who, you know, with him and his father, kind of the creative force behind this, like, what I've seen of it, he's brilliant. And you look at his IMDb and there's not a lot of credits there. And he's obviously a guy that's been doing something for years because, and probably those genes don't hurt, just, you know, the kind of the brilliance to getting from his parents. But, you know, it's just, that's the thing that's kind of fascinating to me is how, you know,
yeah,
out of nowhere.
And, you know, initially you watch the series and you're like, okay, well, I'm watching this for Dan Levy or for Eugene Levy and for Catherine O'Hara because they're great together. They've been in all these other great stuff, these things, but holy crap, Dan Levy and Annie Murphy, who plays his sister, are just insane. And they get better and better as it goes along. But there are, you know, the episode that we watched last night revolved around there's a baseball game or a softball game, and they need to fill out, 2 people have gotten sick, and so the father and son, either of which are natural athletes, have to sub in on either side of the game. And it's just, it's like in another world, it would almost be offensive where how much of the comedy is just gay Dan Levy not being into sports and not knowing what sports are and being upset that he has to be in there, because so much of the comedy is just in another world. Like, I don't like running. What are sports? Like, you know, I don't want to put on these shoes. Like, does the glove match my hat? Like, but because you love these characters so much and you love, you know, the relationship that he has with his boyfriend, like, it is an insular comedy in a way that isn't an exploitative comedy. And that I think is, I don't know. It's rare and awesome.
Andrew.
Yeah. Chris Elliott is always great. There was an episode of Community where I see they show a photo of a character. I'm like, oh, it's Chris Elliott. And then a character appears. I'm like, oh, Mark Maron. It's Chris Elliott wearing like Mark Maron glasses. And yeah, you think that it's like, I'm like, we're like, oh, it's Mark Maron. Like, wow. And then I'm like, wait, that was Chris Elliott.
God, there is just Chris Elliott, who's also just maybe, I mean, one of the funniest people ever. But there's a line in that episode we saw last night where it's a running gag that he keeps switching his bet on who's going to win the baseball game. And at the end, he's like, oh, I got to change my bet again. I got to call my bookie. And he calls his bookie and it's just, hi, honey, is your dad home? that's just the line. But it just, with his delivery, is just so funny. There's just something about him that's just hilarious.
He's we would did a deep dive and was sending Justin clips from SNL and Letterman and stuff. God, of just
the old Letterman stuff. Like, at some point, someone's just going to compile a best of on YouTube and it'll dominate Twitter for a day because that stuff is just so good.
It's amazing. My pick is going to be, I'm reinforcing a pick before, been watching The Toys That Made Us and enjoying The Toys That Made Us. And did I mention this before? I'm watching an episode and some of the stuff, they shoot these people in front of this window with this brick wall. And I'm like, man, that's like, that just feels so Burbank. It just feels so Burbank. And I look and I squint and I can see a Paquito Moss in the background. And next thing I look up Google Maps and there's the production office and it's like, you know, like a mile away.
That's hilarious.
Yeah, this just had a new season come out too, right? Yeah. Toys That Made Us?
Yeah, they did. Great. Movies That Made Us too is really good. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
You know, I would encourage anybody to watch that. That the style of stuff that they do with toys is just great. Like making the narration an active part of the storytelling, and also like they, you know, and this was actually something that I took into Raise the Dead, of just like understanding that you can, like, with Toys That Made Us, look, they're telling a story about, like, there's a very boring business way to do that documentary, right? Like, there's a very by the numbers, like, oh, and then the sales happen, but they understand that the human drama matters and they pace their story out in a way to maximize that. And I think that it's exceptional. I mean, anybody who's like, you can understand a lot of storytelling by just understanding why that show works compared to an average business documentary.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool. It's solid. All right. It's been After.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.